Palestine Laboratory, how Israel exports the technology of occupation around the world. If you want to see our interview with the now imprisoned Moroccan journalist Omar Hadi, as well as our other work talking to the University of Toronto Lab and others about Pegasus, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes. As well, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Sanji Lopez, our executive director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Crude. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. Masks and proof of vaccination are required at this time. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler proposes banning drug use on public property.
Nearly 2,000 Providence nurses were on strike until 5 p.m. today.
And a ruling in the Washington Supreme Court could mean big things for voting rights.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 23rd, 2023. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. The Portland City Council is considering adopting new penalties to discourage public drug use. Mayor Ted Wheeler introduced a proposal that would prohibit the consumption of controlled substances on public property. It's similar to the city law banning public alcohol consumption. People who violate this policy would face up to 6 months in jail or a $500 fine. Wheeler said the policy addresses a loophole in drug possession laws, allowing open-air drug users to skirt penalties. That's a reference to Measure 110, which decriminalized the possession of small amounts of illicit drugs. Under that law, possession is treated as a civil violation, like a traffic offense, subject only to a $100 fine. In fact, a person could avoid the fine entirely by calling a hotline that offers screening for drug addiction. The mayor has suggested that public drug use has skyrocketed in Portland because people aren't deterred by Measure 110's minor penalties. Wheeler said, quote, "Clearly, this is not working as it was intended to. As we navigate these uncharted waters, we're forced to wait for better substance abuse recovery resources. But local governments have an obligation to do what we can to protect our community right now," end quote. Wheeler said Portland police have already recorded more than 100 suspected drug overdose deaths in 2023. The new city rule potentially acts as a local amendment to the state law, making it unlawful for people to use illicit drugs in public spaces. Unlike the state law, it would impose criminal sanctions on small-scale drug possession. It would not apply to people using prescription drugs in public. The Portland City Council will hold an initial vote on the proposal next Wednesday.
Multnomah County will sue fossil fuel companies for their role in the deadly 2021 heat dome. June 24th through June 29th, 2021, saw temperatures throughout the Pacific Northwest climb as high as 116 degrees. The unprecedented heat caused the death of 69 people in Multnomah County alone, with most victims living by themselves and without air conditioning. In a typical year, there are no heat-related deaths. the county will seek $50 million in actual damages, as well as $1.5 billion in future damages from a list of 17 defendants. They include ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron, BP, ConocoPhillips, Koch Industries, and more. Climate researchers and scientists agree the heat wave was virtually impossible without human-caused climate change. Further research found the event was a freak event that should only happen once in 10,000 years. The county claims in their lawsuit such heat events could happen as frequently as every 5 or 10 years. Multnomah County joins a growing list of cities and counties nationwide seeking to hold fossil fuel companies accountable for marketing products driving climate change. This despite internal research from companies like ExxonMobil predicting global warming as early as 1977. While Multnomah County takes the initiative against fossil fuel companies, Portland has seen an increase in crude oil and diesel transportation in the last 12 months through its critical energy infrastructure hub by major fossil fuel company Zenith Energy.
Nearly 2,000 Providence nurses were on strike until 5 p.m. today. It's the first major strike for healthcare workers in Portland in more than 20 years. KBOO's Laura Miller and Peter Forsyth have more on the story.
Oregon's first nurses' strike in more than 20 years wraps up tonight. Union members say they are ready to return to the bargaining table. Nurses and other healthcare workers with the Oregon Nurses Association stopped work for 5 days at three Oregon locations of Providence Health and Services. The striking clinicians highlighted issues such as increased workload and insufficient paid time off as central to their negotiations. During 8 months of negotiations, the nurses and clinicians say that Providence management has failed to listen to their concerns and stop negotiations as soon as the strike was announced. Three bargaining units in the Providence system have joined together for the 5-day strike. The units represent nurses and clinicians at Providence Portland Medical Center, Providence Seaside Hospital, and Providence Home Health and Hospice in Portland. We spoke with clinicians on the picket lines on Northeast Gleason and Northeast Halsey, representing two of the bargaining units. Kara Hayden is a speech and language pathologist and bargaining team member of the Home Health and Hospice Unit. She explains how the units are working together.
And so there are issues across the three units that apply to all of us, like wages, PTO, and safe staffing standards.
During COVID-19, Providence began assigning nurses additional patients and giving them new administrative and clerical tasks, such as ordering supplies. They said Providence has continued these practices even as the COVID emergency has receded. The proposed contracts address these issues, but Hayden is frustrated with what's happening at the bargaining table.
And so there are issues across the three units that apply to all of us, like wages, PTO, and safe staffing standards.
Several nurses felt that as frontline workers, they are being asked to cover for financial problems caused by management, not by nurses. Hayden says Providence's actions have impacted the quality of care provided to patients.
Not only preserving what we're able to provide, but improving the quality of it because it's already been so degraded by these productivity and staffing standards.
On the picket line, nurses said a trend toward corporate management practices marginalizes the needs of healthcare workers and their patients. When Providence merged with St. Joseph's Health in 2016, it became the third largest nonprofit healthcare provider in the U.S. Nurses said the organization's culture has taken a turn for the worse since the merger. Christy Bernier, an ER nurse and member of the Portland Medical Center bargaining team, isn't satisfied with management's response to clinicians' concerns.
They haven't, per se, that I can recall, come out specifically why they're not willing to give us what they want, other than that's the best they can do, right? But it does come across as profits over patients because of the fact that we know that they're making, this is a nonprofit organization making billions of dollars of profit, and we're asking them to be competitive with our other hospitals in the local area. It comes across is that they rather keep their money in their pockets before putting it where they need to create better safe staffing for our patients.
Kira Quinlan recently transitioned to hospice nursing. She described how her week on the picket line has broadened her view and shaped her hopes for a resolution.
You know, I was really nervous about how we would be received by the community. The support has been astounding. You can hear through all the honking how supported we are in the community. And also the camaraderie on the line has been really beautiful. You know, we really are fighting for our community. We are all here. We are all healthcare workers because we truly do love to take care of people. And that comes through. We all have seen similar issues within different disciplines or different parts of Providence.
The spirit of solidarity on the picket line leaves Quinlan feeling optimistic.
I hope that Providence comes to the bargaining table with a renewed sense of who we are, seeing how the community supports us and how we support each other. And I do hope that our absence these past 5 days, I guess it's day four, shows them just how needed we are and how much respect we deserve.
For more interviews with Providence clinicians, listen to Labor Radio at 6 p.m. Monday, June 26th, or find the story under Labor Radio at kboo.fm. For KBOO News, I'm Laura Miller with Pete Forsyth.
Public defense attorneys and advocates worry new changes aimed at fixing the broken system will make matters worse. Oregon is in a crisis when it comes to public defense. There's a shortage of public defenders, which means hundreds of people are left without adequate counsel, something the state and the U.S. Constitution guarantees them. There's a huge backlog of cases of people in jail or out of custody with no public defender to help them. Senate Bill 337 passed on Wednesday and is now waiting on the governor's desk for approval. It asks district judges to develop crisis plans for the hundreds of people without a lawyer, but the legislation doesn't go much further. It calls for reforms that are several years away and sets a new target for getting more trial attorneys in the next decade. One thing it does do is reform how for-profit lawyers interact with the system as public defenders. Previously, lawyers could get a flat rate for handling a certain number of cases, and lawmakers said that created a harmful incentive against the best interests of the client. Under the new law, these lawyers would have to switch to hourly contracts or change to being nonprofit. People who have been in the field a long time says that's likely to drive practitioners away from the public defense, at least in the short term. Other bills passed this week help raise pay for public defenders who frequently make less than prosecutors. Lawmakers say they adopted the bill because it gives Oregon more oversight into the quality of representation that people are getting from public defenders. The time crunch from the walkout also factored in, with representatives saying the bill is what they reasonably could accomplish.
The Washington State Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the state's voting protections. The decision could guide other states with voting rights acts. Eric Tegetoff has more on the story.
A recent decision from the Washington State Supreme Court on voting rights could echo in other states in the future. Justices unanimously upheld the constitutionality of the Washington Voting Rights Act in a case in which Latino residents have struggled to gain representation in local politics despite making up a large part of the population. Yuri Rudensky with the Brennan Center for Justice says other states have passed their own voting rights protections and called the Washington Supreme Court's decision to uphold the state law encouraging.
States have an important role to play in ensuring that all voters are treated fairly, that the rules that apply to elections, to representation, don't deny people opportunities based on race.
The case involved a challenge to how Franklin County elects its commissioners, using at-large elections rather than districts. More than a third of the county's electorate is Latino, but was never able to elect a commissioner. Opponents argued in part that the Washington voting law violated the 14th Amendment guaranteeing equal protection under the law. Gabriel Portugal is the Washington State Director of the League of United Latin American Citizens and was a plaintiff in the case. He says a new district-based system for electing commissioners will go into effect in 2024.
For the first time ever, the county of Franklin will be able to elect a Latino or Latina commissioner. That would be a historical event for all of us.
Rudensky says this is one of the first rulings on a state's voting rights protections and could become a touchstone for others.
As these sorts of policies become more common, both advocates who are in support of these laws and those that oppose them are looking for how courts examine the provisions and what they're saying about them.
California, New York, Oregon, and Virginia have state-level voting acts, and Connecticut joined these states last week. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6 p.m., it's Rising Up with Sona Lee. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be sunny and clear into the evening with an overnight low of 59 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny too, with a daytime high of 82. Today in history, in 1972, Title IX of the U.S. Civil Rights Act of 1964 is amended to prohibit sexual discrimination in public schools and higher education institutions that receive federal funds. The quote of the day is from American sexologist and creator of the Kinsey Scale, Alfred Kinsey, who was born this day in 1894. Kinsey said, "Only the human mind invents categories and tries to force facts into separated pigeonholes."
Native artists gathered in Denver last weekend for an Indigenous Comic-Con festival. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. From heavy metal to a blacklight powwow, a culmination of artists came from across the region recently in Denver for an Indigenous Comic-Con festival. They reflected on Indigenous history and celebrated their culture. The Mountain West News Bureau's Emma Vandernighty reports.
The Iacon event also featured creatives like Sean Biel. The Diné multimedia artist collaborated on Marvel's Heritage Voices comic book.
I grew up on Marvel Comics, so, you know, for them to come and reach out to me, that made that little res boy in me happy because, you know, I never thought that would be something possible.
He believes Indigenous artists can embrace the contemporary without forgetting their ancestral roots.
We do live in modern society, but at the same time, you know, we do hold on to our culture.
Danielle Boyer, a 22-year-old engineer, also presented at the con. She made a talking and singing robot that looks like a tiny minion with cat ears. Boyer says it also helps preserve native languages like Ojibwe Mo'in.
So it'd say a phrase like, "Bujou, hello," say it back. And so it encourages the child to respond to the prompt.
She also started the STEAM Connection, a nonprofit focused on bringing robotic education and building materials to Indigenous youth for free. That idea came out of the discrimination she faced in trying to join robotics clubs. She hopes Indigenous youth will pursue their interests, even when these industries are predominantly white.
We've always been scientists, we've always been inventors, and so spaces like this Comic-Con uplift that, uplift our voice, uplift the ability for us to decide what we want to pursue.
That's the main reason Christina Maldonado Badhand wanted to create this con. She said that when she invited some friends to present their anime work, they questioned if anyone would like it.
And I was like, why would you question whether you belonged somewhere because you had something that was likable for the rest of the general public and assumed that it wouldn't be likable for Native people?
She hopes the con allowed people to bond through shared connections and see that Native people are artists and fans of pop culture like everyone else.
You can celebrate over fandoms and everybody can be nerds together and kind of celebrate that way.
Organizers hope to expand Iacon for its second year and partner with similar Indigenous events in the future. For National Native News, I'm Emma Vandenhyde.
The Cherokee Nation Election Commission certified recently the 2023 general election with the Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. and Deputy Chief Brian Warner taking more than 62% of votes to win re-election and serve another 4 years. Hoskin Jr., 48, is the 18th constitutionally elected principal chief of the Cherokee Nation. The 2023 Cherokee Nation general election had 17,139 votes, up from 13,795 votes in 2019. In the election for tribal council, 6 of 8 races on the ballot were certified as winners. The other races will go on a runoff election in July. The University of Alaska Southeast congratulates faculty Dr. Hune Lance Twitchell and Shugaina Donna Mae Roberts for their recent awards presented at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute 2023 Culturally Responsive Education Conference. Dr. Hune Lance Twitchell of Juneau, UAS Professor of Alaska Native Languages, is recognized with the Distinguished Leadership Award for his tireless work to revitalize the Tlingit language. He also has been instrumental in teaching the language and in developing materials to learn Tlingit. UAS Professor of Tsimshian Language Shugaina Donna Roberts was one of the 7 Distinguished Educator awardees, recognized for her promotion and teaching of the Tsimshian language, having produced dictionaries and other resources, according to the SHI press release. I'm Jill Freitas.
The Senate rejects a repeal of Biden's pistol brace rule. Chelsea Clinton reflects on the upcoming one-year anniversary of the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, and the Federal Reserve chair says interest rate hikes are on the way. With more on those stories, it's Alice Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Under this ruling, the constitutional right to bear arms is null and void if you use a stabilizing brace to operate a firearm.
Republican Kansas Senator Roger Marshall spoke in support of a resolution repealing a Biden rule that would reclassify pistols as short-barreled rifles if they have stabilizing braces. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said the country's epidemic of gun violence has been made worse by easy access to pistol braces. Schumer added that despite the growing list of mass shootings, Republicans want to loosen safety rules regarding firearm accessories.
Some of these mass shooters choose these braces to cause mayhem, and we're loosening the rules on them. It's hard to believe our Republican friends are doing this.
The Senate voted along party lines to reject the Republican-backed resolution. Democratic Representative Becca Belin said Thursday she's saddened by laws targeting LGBTQ plus youth and their families.
And what we see right now is what we saw when I was a kid. And instead of being on the receiving end, instead of it being about trans kids, it was about gay kids. And we were the boogeyman.
Belin made history last November, becoming Vermont's first LGBTQ plus individual and first woman elected to federal office when she won her race for Congress. House Republicans on Thursday punted Representative Lauren Boebert's effort to impeach President Joe Biden to a pair of committees for consideration, but they're under no obligation to take any action. Boebert went after Biden for what she calls the mishandling of the southern border. During a health summit, women's rights activist Chelsea Clinton spoke about the upcoming one-year anniversary of the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision, which removed constitutional rights to abortion.
I'm really angry. And I am... And that is an uncomfortable place to be because of the historical women tropes that so often have been used to kind of silence and diminish kind of women and our voices.
A new Kaiser Family Foundation survey found in states with abortion bans, half of office-based OBGYNs say they have patients who have not been able to obtain an abortion, and about 4 in 10 say they face constraints on their care for miscarriages and pregnancy-related emergencies. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell testified before the Senate Banking Committee on Thursday. Powell said while the Fed didn't raise interest rates at its last meeting, it's likely 1 to 2 interest rate hikes will happen before the end of the year to help with high inflation. When questioned by Democratic Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren over the responsibility of several bank failures, including Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, Powell said his focus is on ensuring it doesn't happen again.
I certainly think that our supervision has been shown to have been lax in not being assertive enough. I think that the supervisors saw the right issues but weren't forceful enough in hindsight.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Portland Amateur Radio Club is hosting its American Radio Relay League Field Day this weekend in Oregon City. The club has been operating since 1941, and like many amateur radio clubs, gathers each year to celebrate Field Day. Field Day is a sort of open house for ham radio, where operators can show off their skills and services to the community. KBOO reporter and ham enthusiast Stevie Ray tells us more about this weekend's Field Day.
Before the internet and smartphones, long-distance communication was difficult and often very expensive. Amateur or ham radio is a method of two-way communicating with your own equipment. The handheld radios resemble a walkie-talkie. Hams also do Morse code. It's been said that radio is the hobby of 1,000 hobbies, so some treat Field Day as a contest. Other groups use the opportunity to practice their emergency response capabilities. Field Day is a picnic, a campout, practice for emergencies, an informal contest, and most of all, fun. Radio people range in age from youngsters to grandparents. Since 1933, amateur radio people across North America have established temporary radio stations in public settings during Field Day to showcase the science and skill of amateur radio. On the fourth weekend of June each year, more than 35,000 ham radio amateurs, also called hams, gather with their clubs, groups, or simply with friends to operate from remote locations. This event is open to the public, and all are encouraged to attend. Many hams in the Pacific Northwest have portable radio communication capability that includes alternative energy sources such as generators, solar panels, and batteries to power their equipment. It's a time where the many aspects of amateur radio come together to highlight our many roles. Field Day highlights ham radio's ability to work reliably under any conditions from almost any location and create an independent wireless communications network. But despite the development of very complex modern communication systems, or maybe because they are so complex, ham radio has been called into action again and again to provide communications in crises when it matters.
Grid down! Grid down! Grid down!
Hams are well known for our communications support in real disaster and post-disaster situations. The amateur radio service has been around for a century. In that time, it's grown into a worldwide community of licensed operators using the airwaves with every conceivable means of communication technology. Josh, KI6NAZ, talks about their special operating location for Field Day.
Joshy, what about you?
I'll actually mention where I'm going for Field Day, because we're going to be doing a lot of 6 meters. I have the extreme honor of being able to go and spend a weekend on San Clemente Island.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm doing their QSL cards. Oh my gosh.
I will be operating from DM03 for the entire weekend on 6 meters, and that's part of the reason why I built that gimbal, because I'm also taking it on the island to do satellite work.
Field Day makes radio equipment available for both licensed and the non-licensed to come and explore. For more information about Field Day or amateur radio, contact w7lt.org. This is Stevie Ray reporting for KBOO Community Radio and 7-3.
The mayor of Baker City is defending his posting of a meme that compared pride to Nazism. Matt Diaz posted a meme to Facebook with 4 pride flags positioned to look like a swastika, with the caption, quote, "When you join 4 pride flags, you become ultra pride," end quote. He faced immediate scrutiny. Baker City staff distanced themselves from his comment, also via Facebook. City Councilor Beverly Calder brought a sign to the council meeting, placing it in front of her seat. It read, quote, "Lead with love," end quote. She made a statement to the Baker City Herald, saying, quote, "His words cast shadows far beyond our city limits, as this discussion will carry on in social media platforms forever. This will impact our efforts to attract new business, as well as the tourism that our communities depend upon. It's not a small thing. It is a significant breach of fitness regarding public service," end quote. In his own statement, Diaz apologized, quote, "for any misunderstanding about racism," and said he is not a racist or a Nazi, but he otherwise defended the sentiment. This comes a few days after the 3rd annual Baker City Pride Walk, celebrating the local LGBTQ+ community.
The Biden administration warns car manufacturers to not comply with the Massachusetts Right to Repair law. This comes from a letter issued by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA. The organization says the law undermines the security of digital diagnostic information transmitted wirelessly by offering open access to functions like steering, acceleration, or braking. The Massachusetts law was originally passed in 2013. It requires manufacturers to make parts and diagnostic tools available to independent auto shops and consumers. The law was updated in 2020 to include tools to read wireless diagnostic data. Despite scaremongering by the car industry about the dangers this posed, the law passed overwhelmingly both times. Car manufacturers agreed to comply with the Massachusetts law in all states rather than face the potential of different rules, in effect creating a nationwide right to repair law. The Biden administration has repeatedly voiced its support for right to repair and pledged to penalize manufacturers who illegally violate warranties. As recently as 2021, the Federal Trade Commission determined that manufacturers' arguments against the law were unfounded. This included the claim recycled in the NHTSA letter that providing repair access to owners made the cars less safe. Now, with manufacturers set to begin complying with the law this month, consumer rights advocates have found the timing of the NHTSA letter suspicious. They argue it's absurd that manufacturers can't provide car owners with secure access to their car's data.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 23rd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Stevie Ray, Laura Miller, Peter Forsyth, and your two anchors, Reed Johnson and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Laura Miller. Special thanks to Jill Freitas, Eric Tegetoff, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available at our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our darling members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, 70%